You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Hi there, thanks for tuning in. Tuesday, March the 5th, grey day here in TW11. Lots to enjoy through the next half an hour, 40 minutes or so, including Harry Derham telling us why Give Me Five will likely not run at the Cheltenham Festival. Kim Bailey on his favourite ever horse, who he has decided to retire today. Retiring Great British Racing Supremo Rod Street. Well, I don't think he'll like me for saying retiring. Stepping down from his role after 15 years tells us why. And we talk to Ollie Folston, managing director now of one of the most exciting stud and stallion ventures in Great Britain at Dullingham Park. He's coming up with our friends at Weatherby's. But where to start? We start with the fallout from Constitution Hill missing the champion hurdle and the impact that's likely to have on the race. And we teed up last week with Robbie Power that Irish Point might well slide into the race. That has become a little more likely, you fancy. And I thought the first call I'd better put in today was to Gordon Elliott. I canter through a number of his leading prospects for next week's Cheltenham Festival. And that is exactly where I start. Is it now much more likely that Irish Point will take on State Man in the big race itself?
Yeah, I think we're probably leaning more towards it at the moment, Nick. You know, obviously Willie's horse is going to be very, very hard beat State Man, you know, and he's a worthy favourite, but you should never be afraid of one horse. And if you look at the betting out from that, I suppose if Lossie Mount goes for the Mayor's Hurdle, it'd look mad if we didn't go, especially the way the ground is, and that I'm keen to go, yeah.
Yeah, so he will likely go there. Pied Piper is in the county as well. He's also about fourth favourite for the champion hurdle. Are you tempted to have a bash with him too?
He's in the county. The county's been the plan all along. I'm actually meeting his owners later on this morning, so I'll have a chat with them and see what they'd like to do. But at the moment, we're probably leaning towards the county, to be honest.
Okay, new owners as well, because he was one of the Caldwell horses. Remind me who's got Pied Piper now. I'm losing track.
There's a syndicate, Mark Rowland and his wife and a few friends. So, look, hopefully he's going to be a good fun horse. He'll be a good horse for the flat as well, so they're going to have great fun.
So you mix and match with him, but likely it's to the county hurdle. I mean, Zanahir's been placed in the race twice. I know he had one of them taken off him, but he's finished in the first three twice. Any reason he shouldn't be able to do the same again?
Look, to be honest, I'd say I'm going to go chase him with him. He's obviously his last two runs have been over fences. I think we'll keep him over fences. We won't try and confuse him too much.
Okay.
I'd say if it'd be Irish Point, I'd imagine.
Okay. Irish Point only. Just a few others that have been sort of in and out of the reckoning. Extraordinarily, Cider Burley ended up as one of the highest rated hurdlers anywhere last year outside Constitution Hill. Are you going to get him in the same nick again for the Stayers Hurdle, or are you going to be out of time?
He's in good form. He's just really come in there the last couple of weeks. He's done a couple of real good bits of work. He seems to be a bit better when the sun is shining, so we're hoping for a bit of nice weather over the next week. But he is in good form, Nick, and we're happy with him. We'll probably have, if Irish Point goes for the champion, we'd have obviously Tiapu and probably Beacon Edge. We could run three in that, you know, in the stairs.
So Tiapu, Beacon Edge and Cider Burley. And because last year, Cider Burley was a real hunch play for you. I mean, you didn't make a big secret of the fact that you quietly fancied him, quite loudly fancied him at a big price. Is it possible you could get him in that sort of nick?
He's coming. He's coming every day. I'm not just going to say he's just where I had him last year, but he is coming and we're happy with him. He's done a couple of nice bits of work, yeah, so we're looking forward.
I wouldn't describe Jerry Colomb as the forgotten horse of the festival, but he hasn't taken too many headlines in the last couple of weeks. Do you think he can win the Cheltenham Gold Cup this year?
I think he's going to have to improve an awful lot in his last run to beat Willie's horse. He was awesome his last couple of runs. I think the drier the ground dries out for Friday, the better chance we'll have. I think on softer ground, Willie's horse is very, very good. Ireland's in good form. He's in each way a chance. You know, if I say any more than that, I'm not going to go sticking my chest out and say he's going to win a Gold Cup, but he's in good form. I think the trip will suit him. He's handled the track before, so yeah, we're looking forward to him.
I mean, you do have to have a few little private, not battles is overstating it, but you do have to have to enforce your opinion from time to time when it comes to targets for horses. It seems to me as though there was a difference of opinion as regards conflated going either cross country or Ryanair. Now, have you won that one or have you lost that one?
No, he's going for the Ryanair. Yeah. So he's going for the Ryanair. Look, I think the way the ground is going to be, I think it's a wise thing as well, because just whether he stayed that longer distance on really soft ground would be a big question mark. So probably the way the ground is looking, the Ryanair is the right race to go for.
Okay, and we know that Brighter Days Ahead is running in the Dawn Run. You've said just about everything there is to say about her. I only really need to ask you if she's okay.
She's in great nick. She's going to do her last bit of work tomorrow morning, and we're very happy with her, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, there would be no alternative for her, would there?
No, 100%, that's where she's going.
Okay. Up in trip for Fieldor?
Yeah, no, he runs in the Ryanair along with Conflated. He's had two good runs, the last two runs, behind two very good horses. So, yeah, he's entitled to take his chance. He has to improve, but he's in good form. We're happy with him.
And which one will Jack ride, you think?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. He's got a couple of decisions to make. Look, he'd probably wait and see what we're at, but obviously he's got first choice and everything, you know.
Okay, and just one last one. Salvador Ziggy's second favourite for the National Hunt Chase. We've not seen him since that run in the American Grand National. Is he in the right spot for that? Do you think you've got him where you want him?
He's spot on. Very happy with him. Wouldn't like to see a bottomless heavy starting off. That'd be my one concern, but he is in good form. I'm happy with him. He's loads of experience.
And he emptied out a bit in America. Was he all right after that?
He burst a blood vessel in America that day, so he did. So it just didn't happen for him, but he's in good form at home and we're looking forward to getting him out.
Fantastic. Well, I think we've cantered through quite a few of them. There was one more only, and that was American Mike. Just what's the situation with him? Were you going to supplement him for the...
We're thinking about supplementing him. Obviously, we haven't the Thursday morning to do it, so I'm meeting his owner today and we'll make a decision, but it's looking like we might supplement him, yeah, for the 3 mile race.
For the Brown Advisory, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a horse, you know, I've got a massive soft spot for him. Do you still have the same sort of soft spot for him?
He's a massive engine, so he has, Nick. He's a massive engine. Like, he's either very good or very poor, but he was good at the last day, so hopefully we can get him to Cheltenham and one piece, and we're looking forward to it.
I don't want to put I certainly don't want to put the mockers on any horses. I definitely don't want to put the mockers on any jockeys, but at the moment, you've actually got a pretty decent squad in one piece. Jack Kennedy, Jordan Gainford is back, isn't he?
Yeah, with Jack Kennedy, obviously, Jordan Gainford, Sam Ewan and Danny Gilligan, they're claiming, and with Jake Cohn. So we've a great bunch of jockeys going over to ride for us, so we're really looking forward to it.
Jordan Elliott in pretty good form with just a few days to the Cheltenham Festival as I welcome in Lydia Hislop to this morning's podcast. And Lydia, I tried to canter through as many of the high-profile ones as possible, and out of that, we can see that he's likely to field just one against State Man in the Champion Hurdle, but that one could be the most potent threat, Irish Point. What do you make of that, and would you do the same thing?
Yeah, I think I would. In fact, I definitely would. And it's good to get some clarity as well on Pied Piper, on Zanna here, because, you know, they were the potential place players. So therefore, it's good to have some kind of clarity on that. But yeah, Irish Point is, he adds some spice, and it's going to be some much needed spice, because, I mean, just taking a step back at the moment, it is so upsetting, devastating, you know, that Constitution Hill can't make the Champion Hurdle. You always want the title holder to defend their crown, particularly a horse as charismatic and brilliant as Constitution Hill. So it's such a shame he's not there. It is a relief, a good thing that we have Statement there to be such a strong flag bearer. It's not as if this would not be, if he does, a worthy winner of the Champion Hurdle. He is a horse of great substance who's had a better than ever season, and things have gone really well for him, and he comes into the race in fantastic form. But he needs a substantial rival in order for it to be a competitive horse race rather than a coronation. There needs to be a substantial rival, and that rival can be Irish Point, because he's won at Aintree as a novice hurdler, the Mersey novices, over 2.5 miles last season. So he's got some pace to him. He began well at Down Royal at the start of the season, with the likes of Magical Zoe behind him. I mean, that was a good performance giving her weight. She is a very high class handicapper, if not a bit better than that. And then we saw him go up in trip in an absolute crawl of a Christmas hurdle at Leopardstown over the Christmas period. But he settled so straightforwardly. And if anything, I think that is his absolute asset, the fact that the horse is straightforward. the thing I suppose we're going to find out is he quick enough?
Irish Point then will go to the champion hurdle, it seems, according to Gordon Elliott. And clearly the owner, Brian Acheson, is broadly in favour of that plan as well. Pied Piper and Zanahy will not be joining him, so the field may yet be pretty small. Amongst other points of interest there, I didn't detect Gordon Elliott wanting to be too bullish about Jerry Colomb, but I think maybe he's just trying to temper his own enthusiasm.
Yeah, I would expect Jerry Colomb to run better than he did when he ran into Galopin de Chomme in the Savills Chase, and Galopin de Chomme just monstered every single horse in the field. I do think that the problem with Jerry Colomb is he doesn't get away from his fences quickly enough. And that's once you move into the absolute top level, and that's where you are when you're taking on Galopin de Chomme, that difference will come across. It's interesting that he thinks if we get drier ground on the last day of the festival, that will help Jerry Colomb. We all remember him almost running down the Real Wacker in the Brown Advisory, when again the key difference between those two horses was the Real Wacker attacking his fences and Jerry Colomb not being able to do it in the same kind of way. However, is he a horse of quality? Absolutely. And can he hit the frame? I think so, definitely. And you know, something can happen with every horse. You know, I'm a big Galopin de Chomme fan, but his jumping can be scratchy sometimes, so it'll be interesting to see which kind of Galopin de Chomme turns up. If it is the horse that won the race by 7 lengths last year, the horse that monstered the Savills Chase, then he wins. If his jumping is a bit scratchier than that, and I felt that they just needed to get the job done in the Irish Gold Cup, then there are other players. I also thought your questioning about Sire de Burley was quite interesting. He as you said, this time last year, it's largely not ignored, but certainly not taken as seriously as it should have done. Gordon Elliott was talking about how well Sire de Burley was. And this is a horse that runs invariably well at the Cheltenham Festival. He has got a tremendous record there. But obviously he's knocking on a bit, as he was last season. But he ended up being, given even the age he was, the dominant staying hurdler of last season, because he went on to win the Liverpool hurdle as well. So it was interesting to hear that he's really coming in the past few weeks. But you asked him, is he in the same place as this time last year? And Gordon was forced to say no, but he did say he's coming every day. So that is one I think that people need to be watching out for, what Gordon is saying about this horse in the days immediately in the run-up to the Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle.
Yeah, I mean, and here with him and Not So Sleepy, I mean, should we not be giving them free entry as pensioners?
Yeah. They add, we'll be talking about another horse like this later on in the show, but they add immeasurably to the festival, but also to horse racing as a whole. And this is one of the key things that when people are asked, why do they love jump racing? Well, it's because these characters, and both Not So Sleepy and Sire de Burley, are without doubt characters in their own different ways. They're what pull people to the sport. They're magnetic in many ways. They haven't got one next to their name. And in many ways, the fans of the sport love them more for that. They're able to follow them through their ups and downs, their good days, their bad days. And when they have a good day, particularly in their latter years, having been around for such a long time and built up such a powerful fan base, well, then there's more people to celebrate with them and more to celebrate. Yeah, they're fantastic horses.
Well, there are two main contributors to this podcast today. One of them is much sharper eyed than me, and she pointed out to me that Gimme Five had been taken out of the Fred Winter. So I thought, yes, Harry Derham has seen sense and is running the horse in the Triumph Hurdle. It might not be quite as straightforward as that, which I think the trainer is about to explain. Harry, where are we standing with this tough little horse now?
He's absolutely fine, Nick. Came out of Kempton well. He was quiet for a week, but he seems back to it again now. He won't run in the Fred Winter. I don't think he's well treated as some of them in it. We've gone and exposed ourselves in a Grade Two now, so I don't think we've got any secrets from the handicapper. And I suppose I will just leave him in the Triumph, just in case. The last couple of days have shown how delicately balanced all these horses are. I mean, I learnt it myself last week with Queen, so I suppose we might just leave him in.
But that's not really a ringing endorsement of your willingness to run the horse. By the sounds of it, it sounds as though you're not going to run if Sugino runs.
Yeah, that would be accurate. Yeah.
I've got to say I'm a bit disappointed. But listen, I'll let you talk me through your logic.
Yeah, it's look, obviously everybody wants to have Cheltenham Festival runners and they want to do well. You know, if I'd gone and won the Adonis really nicely, I probably would be lining up in the Triumph, and if something happens to the top couple, I still might. But I want to try and go places that I can win, and at the moment I don't think I can quite win the Triumph. Well, on ratings, I can't, you know. The handicap are never far away, and on ratings, I can't win it. If the picture changes over the next week and you keep ringing and persuading me, then I might change my mind. It'll be give me five trained end luck.
Well, yeah, good job it's not giving five trained end luck. And this is the thing. You know, you've made such a good start to your training career. Your judgment has been pretty much impeccable so far. I'm sitting here in my cosy office in Teddington with not a horse in sight, saying, well, God, if it was mine and I'd got a, you know, listen, I'm not saying he was a cheap horse, but he's not a ridiculously expensive horse off the flat. You know, what was he, 70 odd rated on the flat? It kind of feels like it's not like everything, like almost everything's a bonus. You know, handy, neat, perfect juvenile, jumps well, really tough, tries hard. You know as well as I do how a lot of horses just completely spit it when it comes to the Cheltenham Festival, and they can't hack the occasion, they can't hack it. He strikes me as having the temperament, the toughness, the jumping ability that he's going to put himself on the premises. He'll overachieve. I don't know. I'm a dreamer and an optimist. You've proved yourself the arch pragmatist already, which is why you're going to make it, and I could never do it.
You're very kind for saying that. Hopefully I'll get it right with him. Look, he's a lovely, lovely horse to have, and I've got an option in my head that is currently strong favourite, and I want to try and make the most of that.
Yeah, and I know Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka, they're big fans of the Ferry House Festival, so, you know, good luck.
Thanks, Nick.
Cheers, Harry. That was Harry Derham. I suppose all is not lost as regards...
You tried.
Yeah, I did try. He took it very well. But we have reached a new age of efficiency, haven't we?
Yeah. And I know what you mean. Absolutely. Can I win this race? No, there must be better targets. Am I doing my job to the full capacity of my ability if I am not identifying races that can be won, rather than running a horse in a race who's fully merited to be there and hoping either for an improved performance or a set of circumstances that fall your way, meaning that you might actually be able to challenge to win. And that is to the detriment of the sport, viewed from the wider sense. But, you know, it's the perception of you know, doing your job as well as you can. And the notion is that modern owners are much more concerned about winning than the taking part, even if the taking part is on the highest stage.
But for every Harry Derham, there is a Ben Pauling.
Go on. I mean, obviously,
I'm being flippant because I have enormous regard for both in their different ways. But I think you are going to get trainers who, when it comes to a situation like this, would go, I've got half a squeak of running well in the Supreme Novices / Berrin Bingham, now the Gallagher Novices Hurdle, incidentally, more of that in a minute, / the Albert Bartlett. Yeah, I'll give it a go. And then you'll have others going, I can't really win that. I might wait for something a little easier.
And all power to those who try Elbow, because, as I said earlier, the sport does rely on people competing and believing. And if you have a right to be there, you have a right to be there. So I can see both sides, but as a dispassionate observer of the sport, a large part of me yearns for the days when, you know, horses were running. I realize that training has moved on and, you know, the races are probably harder and in terms of what they take out of a horse physically afterwards, but, you know, nonetheless, I yearn for seeing these horses with the regularity that I certainly recall of my youth. But I wonder, you know, I mean, maybe I'm undoubtedly, as everyone has, probably has rose-tinted spectacles as they look in the rearview mirror.
Right, the final Tuesday before the Cheltenham Festival. It's time for the Time Form Perspective with Dan Barber. Dan, the more things change, the more they stay the same, it seems to me, as horses fall by the wayside in the run-up to the Cheltenham Festival. Disappointing, not unusual.
No, far from it. And I'll go back a long way. I just want to start with a quote, actually, from Michael Dickinson in the aftermath of his first five in the 1983 Gold Cup. He said, "I wish people realised what a hell of an achievement it is for anyone to get a horse to Cheltenham fit enough to run well in the Gold Cup. Each year, horses drop out of the anti-post betting, and to get here, let alone win the race, often seems almost impossible." Now, he achieved it by getting horses to finish 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a Gold Cup, an achievement that hasn't been matched really until the modern day. But it does exemplify the fact that this has always been an issue, and there are examples of late withdrawals, 11th hour withdrawals from the Cheltenham Festival of big race favourites dating way back to the 70s, and I'm sure beyond that as well.
Can you think of any notable examples in recent years that people will almost certainly have forgotten? Because in the record books, you do not have an asterisk saying, "Oh, and by the way, so-and-so didn't show up."
Yeah, I'd say the most high profile. I mean, Nicky Henderson's had little luck, as we'll discuss, and it's obviously Constitution Hill that's prompted this, but Best Mate, in a full circle from your chat with Tom Taff last week, who was saying that they got wind that Best Mate had bled on the gallops or wherever, and that half prompted them to decide that it was right to have a crack with Kicking King when he was off the canvas. But yeah, we had Best Mate, a three-time winner of the Gold Cup, who in 2005, 8 days before the race went ahead, he was withdrawn as well. We've obviously lost Marine National, Constitution Hill this year. Nicky Henderson had the misfortune of Altior dropping out a matter of days before a champion chase. And remarkably, was followed soon after by Shaq and Poursoir, and it left that renewal where Defi de Soy went off a short price favourite, and he didn't come up to scratch either. Henderson's luck been pretty much out on this, because it was one thing having obviously Binocular, who he like Kicking King was a back off the canvas job, but it completely escaped my memory that he had to be withdrawn the year after, as he was supposed to be defending his crown due to an issue with medication. And that's something that reared its head back in the 80s, in 76, actually, it was, when 10 Up, the Irish horse, favourite for a Gold Cup, he'd won the race the previous season, and it would turned out at the last minute that, having been medicated in Ireland to stop his problems with bursting blood vessels, he wasn't actually able to run on that medication in the UK and was forced to be withdrawn. So plenty of examples going back a long way. And if I may just add in one final one, I wasn't alive, I'm happy to report, but Silver Buck back in 1980, he too was favourite for a Gold Cup. And apparently the owner turned up to watch him on the morning, turned up at the racecourse, not realising the horse had already been withdrawn on account of the ground, say some reports. Some say a low blood count.
Wow. Well, I was alive, sadly, but I don't remember it. 1980.
Thankfully, Phil Turner exists, our encyclopedic knowledge of horse racing. He was able to fill in a few of the gaps of my hazy memory.
And I didn't know that story. You and I discussed on this slot a couple of weeks ago how far clear State Man was of the opposition, you know, about as far clear as Constitution Hill was of him. I was looking at the betting last night thinking, oh, I've got to try and find a bet in this race. And I just thought, well, isn't State Man a bigger price than he ought to be?
I need to list the top five here in the time form ratings, because of course Constitution Hill is still in the race. He's still entered in the race. He was £10 clear of State Man. State Man was £4 clear of Irish Point. I think he should go for the stayers. We'll see what they do. Who was £2 clear of Lossiemouth, who is £3 clear of Echoes in Rain. The first five in the time form figures, only one of them is a definite runner, maybe two at a push if Irish Point switches down from the longer distance race. We are going to have a horse rated in the low 150s probably, who will make his or her presence felt at the end of a champion hurdle in terms of each way betting. And I suppose the interesting angle from that each way perspective, Nick, is whether the absence of Constitution Hill in a perverse way now encourages more people to have a crack, because this horse they couldn't beat realistically on his game is now out of the picture and a few maybe more willing to have a try. I don't know if you had any names in mind. I wondered if Nicky Henderson's Lucia might pick up a few pieces. As we know, a strong travelling mare. She was in the framing Grade 1 company at Cheltenham and at Aintree last season.
Now, I've been challenged to teach you how to be a part of buying, breeding and owning a winning horse in just 30 seconds, something that takes years to master. Right, here goes. First, become one of 100 members of Century Racing Club, a completely unique syndicate that allows members to oversee the buying of horses that will compete in the biggest races for George Bowie. And that's it, really.
Wait, hang on. Is it really that easy to do? It is. You're saying one-off payment means members can experience the purchase of a horse at a breeze-ups and then they'll run in top races? God, amazing. I don't think I need to mention the extensive networking opportunities or the annual members badge for ARC Tracks. Yeah, and it also says here they'll launch with 6 horses and members can swap the lineup over time. I think I can do this in 5 seconds.
To experience everything you want as an owner, all you need to do is visit the Century Racing Club website and email Danny on members@centuryracingclub.co.uk. Well, you wait pretty much a year to speak to Kim Bailey, and then poor Kim gets me to call him twice in a week. Excellent stuff last Friday, of course, and here we are again, because Kim, the horse you've described as your favorite ever racehorse to train, you've decided to retire today. You've trained some wonderful horses, some legendary names of the turf. This horse, First Flow, might not be uppermost in people's mind in that bracket, but he's been very good. And why has he meant so much to you?
I think the whole story of him has been so strange, really. I mean, he has no pedigree, has no right to be a racehorse. He's very quirky, incredibly talented, hard as nails, tough as an old boot, a proper character.
Now, why now? Because you have tried to retire him a few times and it hasn't really worked.
Yeah, I went to Sandown last year to retire him because I thought that was the time, the right time, and he ran an absolute blinder, finishing second to Hewick. Tony Solomons, who owns him, is not in the best of health and is not able to really appreciate the horse's true understanding and where he is. So and his daughter Nicola very kindly suggested we could keep going. And I rang her after Sandown and said, look, you know, having come here to retire him, please can I have another season with him? And she totally agreed that, you know, as long as he was happy, he must carry on racing. He ran a very good race first time out at Ascot. He ran a fantastic race at Chepstow both times, carrying top weight. He did exactly the same at Lingfield, which was an extraordinary race, really. And I probably should have retired him then. It was a difficult one to make that decision at the time, emotionally for lots of reasons. We're now in a situation where he's top of weight. Wherever he runs, he's going to run top weight in the handicap. There are very, very few races for him. The condition races, he's probably not good enough. I don't want to see him going downhill. He doesn't deserve it.
Have you ever felt as strongly about an animal as you do about him?
No. No, definitely not. He's been unique. He's been totally unique.
And so, where now for First Flow? I'm sensing that you don't really want to let him too far out of your sight.
No, Claire, my wife, is very good at rehoming racehorses, she works very hard at making sure these horses have wonderful homes in the future. Hopefully, he will find one not too far away.
Okay. And of all those special days, and there've been a lot of them, he's won 12 of his 28 races. Which one will you always take with you?
I think it has to be the Clarence House. It's a Grade 1. I hadn't won a Grade 1 for a while. The saddest thing, it was during COVID, so you weren't able to celebrate. Celebrating a Grade 1 with a glass of water is not really my style. It was a very sad day for that respect, and also for the fact Tony Solomons wasn't able to get there. Watching on television is never the same, is it? So, that was a special day. Plenty with him, though.
And it seems to me that more special to you because of your relationship with Tony and because you describe him as the best possible owner for a horse like this.
Well, Tony's been my longest serving owner. He's been with me every single season bar my first. He's had several flat trainers. He's only had one jump trainer. We've had some good horses for him. You know, latterly, obviously, Harry Topper. He's never questioned anything, and he's always allowed me to get on what I wanted to go and do. He understood racing appreciated the goods, you know, the highs and lows of the sport, which I think is something very few people can understand.
Well, there are very few horses who can bow out on such an amazing high. A winner at the age of 12 with a rating of nearly 160. He's been a great credit to you all. Kim, thanks so much.
Thanks very much, Nick.
Kim Bailey, not once, but twice in a week. Meaningful contributions both times. That, Lydia, I'd imagine a few people will have been chopping onions.
I certainly was. And I can understand it. It's for a couple of reasons, isn't it? First, you know, the horse. I mean, he is a tremendously charismatic horse, and Kim's always called him hard as nails. I remember, you know, there was one time where he absolutely demolished a fence. He sort of walked through a fence and just sort of kept going like it wasn't there, you know, bits of timber and birch, you know, bouncing off him as he galloped onwards to victory. And that win at Lingfield was just superb. I mean, he looked slightly reluctant to line up at the start, and then he's always towards the fore and the last three jumps of the final three fences, just absolutely spot on, and winning off a mark of 158, carrying 12 stone, considering 19 pounds and upwards to his rivals, the second and the third, literally half his age, this horse, a 12-year-old, just a tremendous character. And so, that big day, of course, the winning of the 2021 Clarence House, beating Politologue by 7 lengths, taking him on a long, long, long way out under a fantastic attacking ride from David Bass. You know, the horse has won the Peterborough Chase. He's gone to Cheltenham a couple of times. He's much better right-handed. He was hanging and jumping right when he contested the Supreme and the Champion Chase. But that's the horse of that quality, but also a horse with charisma. And as Kim said, with no pedigree, no right to be a racehorse. But not just was he a racehorse, he was a grade one winning racehorse. So obviously, when a horse like that retires, it's going to have a massive impact on your yard. But First Flow, clearly, you can hear it from Kim, means more to him than that. He signifies his relationship with Tony Solomons, you know, one of his first ever owners. They've been together since 1979, 45 years together. The Clarence House that First Flow won was just a couple of days, two or three days before Tony's 91st birthday. They must have been through so much together during that time, must have enjoyed each other's company to such a large degree. And clearly we hear from Kim that, you know, Tony isn't able to enjoy his horse racing in the way that he had done previously. And Kim will be remembering all of those times that they will have had together over those 45 years. And he's seeing, I suppose, an end of an era on the horizon, and certainly First Flow signifying so much of that. So you can understand why he's going to be so welled up, and this is going to feel so significant to him. And it was such a lovely tribute to the horse, and also such a lovely tribute to Tony Solomons and their friendship together.
Well, slight end of an era vibes yesterday when Rod Street, one of the longest standing senior executives in British racing, announced his intention to step down from his role as chief executive of Great British Racing. Great British Racing was inaugurated as Racing for Change many years ago and has been the promotional and marketing arm of the sport now for well over a decade. And Rod has been in charge all that time. He's also combined that with his role as chief executive of British Champion Series, and he will remain in situ at least in the short term there, certainly until, I think, the end of this cycle. But he can tell us more because he joins me now. Rod, you've been in this job for so long, it almost seemed as though you were a fixture and an unmovable fitting. Why have you decided to say au revoir to, well, not au revoir, goodbye to GBR?
It feels that the time is right. 15 years is a long time in any role. And I think 15 years in a multi-stakeholder role, which has its challenges, as you would understand, is a lengthy term. And I wanted to go out on my terms and when the timing was right. I've got some plans, which I'm sure we'll talk about in the future. But it feels like a pretty solid innings. And I've been reflecting on it, Nick, and thinking that in that time I've been chief executive, I've worked with four different BHA chief executives in that period, which I think goes to show what the challenge of being a senior person in a multi-stakeholder role is like. But full of good memories and positivity, and it really just feels that the time is right.
You hand over with the sport in what shape from your perspective?
I think the sport has a lot of challenge at the moment. We have to acknowledge that, don't we? I think its core is in very, very good shape. I remain very positive that we've got tremendous assets, great festivals, wall-to-wall television coverage. We still have our own daily newspaper, two digital channels, podcasts like this. And so there are lots and lots of ingredients which give us cause to think the sport has got a lot to sell. But we have challenge. We've had the issues with affordability. Our social license has been under challenge. We remember how uncomfortable last spring was with Animal Rising. And of course, post-COVID, we've gone into the most powerful commercial headwinds at a time when belts are tightening, people have got less disposable income, and there is endless choice of how people spend their money. So I think the sport has challenge, but I think it's big enough and robust enough to face it. And at the heart of it, of course, because it reflects the role I've done for 15 years, I think we promote ourselves much better now. When I came into this role, Nick, we moaned incessantly about how poor we were at promoting jockeys, not telling stories, good opportunities slipping by. And that rarely happens now. So I think the base for the way we promote the sport is infinitely better.
Now, at times of deep frustration, you and I have had many conversations, both on and off the record, about the inadequate funding for the sports marketing arm. And given the financial headwinds, as you put it, that we're now facing, it's unlikely that someone's going to shake a tree and you're suddenly going to get a massive marketing budget. But how can the sport more creatively ensure that this side of the industry is better equipped to do its job?
Well, I think the current challenges will create and are creating a lot of urgency, Nick. And I think the sport actually does have a lot of financial resources, but they're all in different places. So it's not that the sport is devoid of money. That's not entirely true. And I think it's up to all of those senior stakeholders, those people that can make decisions, to find a way of funding the promotion of the sport, because we are in a fight. And I'm not being dramatic about that. It's just a matter of fact that outside of football, all sports are struggling. Cricket is spending multi-millions to try and develop a fan base of the future. You've seen two Premier League rugby clubs go bust. It's tough out there. Racing has to face up to the fact it's competing for new consumers. It's competing for attention. It's competing for people's engagement and interest. And I think as the sport understands that and the urgency becomes more and more apparent, it will have to find a way. But it invariably does. And I, you know, I do remain optimistic that despite me having a very long stint in this role of almost 15 years, racing's been around for 350 years. It will see all of us out. I think we'll continue to thrive. And if all of the top people in racing are determined that it has a great and robust and buoyant future, they'll find a way.
How long's this been in the offing, this move, Rod? Did you always think, well, I don't want to go on any longer than X or Y? Or is it just wake up one morning and think, I've had enough, I need to do something else?
A bit of both. It wasn't a wake up in the morning job. It tends not to work that way. It tends to be iterative. I've enjoyed this role immensely. It's a privilege to work in racing. You get to do fantastic things. You meet some of the most interesting and engaging people. And there have been so many challenges that we've faced that it's never, ever been dull. But in more recent times, I've just wondered about what the next step for me might be. I'm also conscious that I'm 58 next month, and so there's a cap really on how long I go on with lots of energy in any role. And so it just became apparent that it was time to do something different. And once you land at that place, when you know, and so it's time to do something else. But I'm still going to be around. Champion Series, I'm going to look after for a few months yet. And then having worked in the sport for over 30 years, I can't imagine not doing something in racing. So I would imagine a lot of my mentoring and coaching and any help I can do with developing people and helping them articulate themselves at board level, at public speaking level, it'll be based around the sport for sure.
I don't think there's anyone who would disagree, even if they have disagreed with you down the years, that you have always presented yourself with a smile and have taken quite a lot of brickbats with an extremely easygoing countenance. I go back to the days of 2010, Ben and Brian racing for no change, and on and on it went. We're in a very different place now. What advice would you give to, if indeed there is a like-for-like successor to replace you, what advice would you give them in terms of guiding principles to move this sport in the way that it should be moved?
Goodness me. Well, take the sport seriously, but don't take yourself seriously. And I think that is really, really important. So you know that I'm very passionate about things like Hall of Fame and our heritage and any number of things that we've promoted. So you know that from a professional level, that's what comes as default with me. But we shouldn't take ourselves too seriously. We're all just passing through. And I think it's important not to get too hung up. And I think that's probably kept my good humour along the way. I would urge anyone or any number of people trying to take the sport forward to, when they can, seek forgiveness over permission, because you are never going to get unanimity in a sport that has such a complex structure. We are not a supermarket chain, Nick. You can't make a decision in a boardroom and have it brought to life over 500 branches. That's not how we're structured. So I think you have to focus about getting enough people on board and then cracking on with it and being prepared that not everyone will always be happy, but look at the common good, always look at what the larger outcome is and what the big win is. And crucially, though, and it's really interesting you ask this, I don't really want to give too much advice, because something that frustrates me is when people do a long term in racing, they then become the go-to person to comment on new things that are happening. And you'll kind of see that X broadcaster says what, or X BHA chief slams X. And I don't want to be that person. I've had my turn. I've had a very long stint. I've had lots of opportunity. I think when new people come in to do a role, you should let them get on with it and not be too critical, because I know what it's like when you're in the middle and I know how tough it can be.
Rod, I wish you all the best. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Nick.
Rod Street, then, who is stepping down as chief executive of Great British Racing. 15 years, Lydia, is a long stint for a senior role in horse racing. What do you think has enabled Rod to stay in situ for 15 years? And I mean that both in terms of his own appetite to do it and the appetite of the sport to keep him there.
Optimism, I think. Anyone who knows Rod will know that he is relentlessly optimistic. He's always focusing on what can be done positively. How can we resolve this? What's the way forward? And also a love of horse racing. I thought it was really significant, the tribute that Great British Racing chairman Tony Langham made on Rod's departure. It's quoted in the Racing Post article today. It's the last line. He's the nicest man in racing. He's very lovely, but it's this part of the sentence. And one of the few people that has the sport's best interests at heart rather than one particular segment of the sport. I think that answers your question. Unfortunately, those people are quite few and far between. Those people who have the sport's long-term objective interests at heart. And while they're making their way through making decisions about the sport, and he'll get some right and he'll get some wrong, that is where he is coming from. He's not coming from a particular subjective point of view. And that's why I think those two qualities.
So what do you think the sport now will do as regards Great British Racing? I was sort of wondering whether they might just completely remodel it, whether there will be a like for like replacement for Rod. How do you think they're going to play it with some knowledge of the way these new committees work?
Yeah, I think they'll restructure it in some kind of way. Again, in the Racing Post article, the third paragraph says his departure raises further questions about how Premier Racing will be promoted after criticism of what was last year described as the project's hopelessly inadequate marketing budget. No successor to Street has been named, and it is understood the Racecourse Association, Thoroughbred Group and BHA are looking at GBR's leadership structure. They have revised the structure for better and for worse in different cases of all the committees and power bases across the industry. And it is not surprising that they would be looking to, it's logical in many ways, to be reviewing this. I know that Rod sits as an observer, not a non-voting member of the commercial committee. So that would have been an interesting role to play. So he would have seen the workings out of what has come to be the industry strategy to date. And I would imagine that the, how would I put it? I think it was precipitate launch of Premier Racing. Others would disagree. He would have been watching that. And essentially, once that decision was made, the hot potato of, you know, off you go and there you go and market it would have been handed to Great British Racing and Rod. So the person or persons who succeed him still have that to wrestle with. And you have discussed with him in your interview about the inadequate funding of this element of the sport. Some funding has gone forward to this area, but I do think the sport needs to understand that it does need to be promoted better. I do think Great British Racing has left the sport, or Rod's departure from Great British Racing means that the sport is in a better position than when it started. I do think that, you know, milestones largely are not missed. I do think that those jockeys who wish to be part of the promotion of the sport have been enabled to do so and have done so well. I think perhaps the greatest achievement, though, is National Racehorse Week. I think the way in which that has enabled members of the public and fans to get a behind the scenes understanding of the sport, and they've done some research on it as well, and the way in which it has put aside misconceptions or corrected misconceptions about the sport and generated a more positive understanding and a more positive outlook towards the sport amongst those who have attended. I think that is a tremendous legacy to have set in motion.
All right, Tuesday round the bloodsuck well with our friends at Weatherby's. The Stallion Book, the excellent, excellent global stallion app. Unusually, we don't have to venture too far from home, but we do have to go to a new venture. And that new venture is in Newmarket. It's Dullingham Park Stud. It is the brainchild of Steve Parkin. And it is now being run. The managing director is Ollie Folston, for many years a familiar face and voice as one of the senior auctioneers at Tattersall's, just down the road. But he has somewhat returned to his roots. Ollie, welcome. How are you finding the new job?
Yeah, hi, Nick. Very exciting. It's a new role, obviously, having come from Tattersall's for where I was 25 years at Tats. It's kind of going back to my roots, really, because I grew up on a stud farm, stallion farm down in the West Country. To work for a guy like Steve Parkin is a great honour. As we all know, Steve's put an incredible amount of investment, time and money into the industry, and he comes in from every angle. He's a big racehorse owner. He's got over 100 horses in training. He buys over, between 40 and 50 yearlings every year. He supports all the breeders and, really hoping that all the breeders get behind what he's trying to achieve here. He's got huge ambitions. So the next step was a stallion farm. So we've got five stallions dotted between here and Ireland at Ballyhane Stud, and we've got two here in Shaquille and Soldiers Cool.
I'm going to talk about the stallions in a little while. I want to take you back to your own upbringing, though. You said you grew up on a stallion farm in Dorset. For those with medium-term memories. Just remind us of where that was and what was happening there at the time.
It was actually Somerset, Nick.
Somerset. Apologies.
Being from Somerset.
Yeah, that's like saying someone from Cornwall, you're from Devon, isn't it? Or saying someone from Northumberland, you live in Scotland. Yeah.
Exactly. No, my family, Dick and Caroline Folston, we had Britain House Stud just outside Yeovil, and back in the day had plenty of stallions down there. It was back when the books were 40, so it's a bit different now, and times have moved on a fair bit. So it was a great upbringing and a great grounding as well, and I grew up surrounded by horses, stallions and mares. So.
And who are some of the stallions that people might remember?
Well, Gay Fandango was an ex-Coolmore horse, was kind of Hush as well. And then a bit later on, Emirati, Forzando, Windjammer, Car White. Oh, there was a big string of them, really. I mean, there was always two or three stallions, and the most recent probably being Emirati, who sired the Royal Hunt Cup winner, refused to lose, I think it was, yeah. And then he was sold to the National Stud, and then Mum and Dad moved over to Australia.
And your time as a senior auctioneer at Tattersall's, I guess when the hammer came down at 5.4 million for alcohol free, was there a bit of you that thought, I can't really get any better than this?
A little bit. It was a great honour being at Tattersall's for 25 years and selling, you're selling amongst the best bloodstock in the world, really. And I was fortunate enough to sell at Book One and during the Sceptre sessions and the Tuesday evening of the December Mayor's sale. So you get to sell, the best bloodstock in the world. So it was a great honour, great buzz as well. And yeah, there's a part of me that misses it. But, life goes on, new challenges, and I'm really enjoying the current challenge there.
Okay, and the current challenge is different how? In terms of your day-to-day life, how easy have you found it to sort of slip back into that old pair of shoes, if you like?
Pretty well, I feel. I think I have anyway. We're obviously doing the covers early in the morning, late at night during the season. But I mean, you're still selling, but you're just selling in a different capacity, really. I mean, it did help my time at Tattersall's, speaking to all the breeders and doing all the yearling inspections, because essentially I'm talking to all the breeders and selling nominations or trying to sell nominations to them. So it's not dissimilar in that respect.
And tell me a little bit about these stallions that you're standing now at Dullingham Park and how well they've gone down with breeders.
Very well. So we've got Shaquille, who was he'll be crowned champion European sprinter of 2023. He's the world's best three-year-old sprinter as well. He's gone down very well. He won the Commonwealth Cup and then, I mean, an extraordinary performance when he won the July Cup, when he did everything wrong and still pulled away up the hill from the older horses. And we acquired him just before the July Cup, and he retired here. He's come here, and he's just settled in beautifully. All the breeders came in December sales and fell in love with him, really. And I think we had about 80 odd people look at him on the Saturday morning, and I think 65 of them booked a nomination. So it was a fairly easy sale for my. It was easy for me for the first stallion, the first new stallion we had here. That he was such a good looking boy and sold himself. And then we got Soldier's Cool as well, who has just started his fifth year covering. He was leading first season sire by number of winners for a Great Britain GB based sire. He's gone down very well, and we kind of felt that he's sort of plugging a bit of a gap in the market regarding the cheaper end of a commercial stallion. It just seems to be that the days of the Royal Applause, Compton Place, Bahamian Bounty, Kailaki, they're just not around anymore. So we're hoping that he kind of fills a bit of a gap for that. And he's got off to a great start, and we're hoping that they're going to train on. He's had 4 3-year-old maiden winners this year, so they look like they're pointing in the right direction. He's got a runner in the Spring Cup on Thursday. He's got a couple of runners in the Group 3 Pre-Sigi at the end of April. So, no, we're all hopeful and hoping he's going to have another big year.
It struck me there. I mean, to what extent is your geography now an advantage? I mean, it is getting harder for people to ship horses between countries post-Brexit. And there are quite a few, fast stallions standing in Ireland of that ilk, but rather fewer in the UK. Is that likely to be to your advantage, do you think?
I definitely feel that. I remember my time at Tattersall's. I'd get numerous calls every year just saying, oh, we don't know what cheaper stallions to use, or I say cheaper, but the faster, precocious stallions to use. What would you guys at Tax, you know, what are you liking, what are you not liking? And, you know, and I just felt that, well, we felt as well with Joe and Steve as well, that he would fill that gap in the market as an affordable, fast, precocious, son of showcasing.
So knowing Steve Parkin as we do, we're assuming that this is just the tip of what could be quite a large iceberg. How grand are the ambitions at Dullingham Park?
Very big. They are very, very ambitious. Steve's a very ambitious man. He's a very hungry man as well. He wants to succeed, as we all do. And we think that we've got the right team behind us to progress to the next level. We've got some very exciting colts. Well, Philly's touch on the Philly first. We've got Fallen Angel, who's our classic hope for this year. She won the Moy Glare, and everything's pointing in the right direction. So hopefully it'll all fall into place at Newmarket in May. Then we've got some very exciting colts as well. We've got, and they're all by the right size that you want to be standing at stud as well. We've got First Alliance of Dubawi, Night Raider, very impressive 9-length winner by Dark Angel. We've got Flight Plan, who won the Dullingham Park Stakes by Knight of Thunder. We've got King's Gamble by Kingman, Indian Run, who won the Acom. So yeah, it's a huge year for us, and hopefully we can have our own home-based sires coming for next year.
Ollie, I wish you all the best with it. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
Lovely. Cheers, Nick. Thanks very much.
Ollie Falston there, who is now overseeing a Dullingham Park stud for Steve Parkin, and Steve's daughter Fabienne playing a big part in that as well, together with Kat Irma. They've got a good team developed. They've got good stallions. And if Steve Parkin, Lydia Hislop, just wants something to be big, he'll make it big.
It will be big, absolutely. It's exciting. I shall be watching this space. I can't quite disconnect out of jump racing at the moment, but I look forward to seeing what comes of that.
Now, Gallagher are the new sponsors of the Baring Bingham Novices Hurdle. Just for a reminder, the Baring Bingham Novices Hurdle is the 2.5 mile Novices Hurdle that takes place on the Wednesday of the Cheltenham Festival and has been known by various names, the Ballymore, the Neptune, the Sun Alliance, the Royal and Sun Alliance. It is now the Gallagher Novices Hurdle. And just before you think the government have done a bizarre vault fast and legalised tobacco sponsorship, this is not that Gallagher. This is Gallagher Insurance Company, American founded, but with a British arm. Lydia, is that right?
Seems to be from the very brief searches I have done so far. I know it's the Jockey Club have said it's their official community partner since May 2023. And they've been, this is a sort of strengthening of the relationship between the two. Gallagher have been very, very keen to open the sport up to young people and also from a wider range of backgrounds and communities, and to look at the racing industry and potentially consider it and all the various ways in which you can be employed and enjoy a profession within it. Consider that sport as and industry as somewhere where you might want to, you know, make your life and your career. And from the information that I have here, I don't know how long standing the partnership is, but obviously I hope it will be long-standing and that Gallagher will get the full benefit of being so closely tied to one of the flagship races of the entire festival in the seasons to come.
Right. Do you have a tip for me?
I do. I'm going anti-post, if that is all right with you. And I'm going next week at there's Cheltenham Festival next week. I'm going to the Trusted Trader Plate Handicap. And this is a horse that I have fancied for the race since mid-January. And I was keenly poring over your interview with Gavin Cromwell from last week, hoping that he might mention the horse. And he didn't. And then I was thinking, well, is that a good sign or is it a bad sign? And then I noticed in a preview more recently that Gavin put this horse up as his nap of the week. So it is, let's be clear about it, in the Plate. This horse ran really well in the Albert Bartlett last season, didn't seem to get quite home over the 3 miles. He's got some very solid novice chase form this season, the form that looks more solid the more you look at it. He is a very reliable jumper. I felt he ran really well in a handicap when we saw him at Ferry House, I think it was, earlier this season. And that suggested to me that intermediate trip is the one that will see him in a better light rather than the 2 miles over which he was seen there. So it is, let's be clear about it, for the Plate on the Thursday of the Cheltenham Festival.
All right. Lydia, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks to all my guests as well. We will see you once again tomorrow. Today was Tuesday, the 5th of March. Bye for now. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.